Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill. We'll get to her in a moment. When you get a chance, do me a favor, check us out at consumerguide.com. That's consumerguide.com. Check out our 2025 Best Buy list. Super handy if you're looking for a new car, crossover, or truck. And you can listen to the podcast right there on our homepage. Back episodes, it's easy. They're all laid out with descriptions. However, you should subscribe and leave us nice reviews. We just got a review, not so nice.
Did they comment on my voice or the fact that you're mean to me?
The former.
My voice.
You don't want to read it.
I'm used to people commenting on my voice.
That voice is Jill Simonello, managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and prolific freelancer. How are you, Jill?
I am doing well, but apparently I need to do some voice
I wouldn't worry about
controls.
It too much. You've been busy, right? You've been driving around?
I have been. I spent last week in Indianapolis visiting my mom and had the Mazda CX-90.
Oh, and, well, that's a good highway car.
It is. It is a very good highway car. I did a road trip review, which will appear on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk on the YouTube channel sometime soon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Been a busy week. I don't want to talk about this today, but we might talk about it with Sam Fiorani when he's on. Tesla's stock continues to slip.
Ugh.
The grim reality here is there isn't a fast answer for Tesla. Let's take politics out of this for a moment,
mm-hmm.
at least my political
your political
perspective,
take.
And just look at this sort of, as uncontroversially as we can, and that's the fact that he's become unpopular with the exact audience that would buy his vehicles.
Mm.
And that's hurting him in Western Europe, and that's hurting him in the U.S. And then he's become unpopular in China for different reasons, but also non-Chinese brands have become unpopular in China. This is a problem for Ford, for General Motors, other makers that have been doing business. Volkswagen having big trouble in China. All these makers that had long-term done very well there,
right?
Not doing so well there.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get rid of some of their excess capacity. So we'll talk about all that stuff later, but the Tesla story is ongoing.
Yeah.
And the next earnings call, which is a couple months away, will be interesting, but I think they're in big, big trouble.
Yeah.
Also, the Juniper, you know about this.
Mm.
The refresh Model Y is called Juniper. That's
okay.
Just internal code.
Yep.
Like Camaros and Firebirds used to be F-bodies. It's like that. Coming out soon, but there is an enormous stash of the old Model Ys just sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
$8,000 rebates.
Ooh.
Tesla is offering $8,000 on those rebates. If you can deal with the weirdness of owning a Tesla right now, kind of a nice deal. I like the Model Y. I'm just going to be honest here. It's a good car.
Yeah, I've sat in the back seat of the Model Y. I haven't driven it.
Back seat's not awesome.
I'm small. It was fine for me. Here's the thing. People are like, why do you hate on Tesla? And I'm like, I don't hate on Tesla. I have no opinion about Tesla because I've never really spent any time with Tesla.
Well, it's not about liking or hating them. The Cybertruck is bad. The Model Y is good. That's not hate.
How do you know the Cybertruck is bad? Have you driven it?
I have not driven it.
Then you don't get an opinion.
No, I do.
Nope.
At some point, you can aggregate enough public opinion to determine that it is, in fact, bad. And in fact, the lack of evidence that it is good is shocking.
Hmm.
And there are no good reviews of the vehicle from people who have driven it. I can't believe
but the people who own it have to like it.
They don't have to like
it. Sure they do. They own it. They drive it. They have to like it.
I own things I don't like.
Like?
I don't know. I got to think of something. This pen isn't awesome.
You like that pen.
I do like that pen. I just couldn't come up with an idea.
I know. See, like if something doesn't give you joy, set it free.
Well, people are selling their Cybertrucks, which is why they're cheap used. So to get back to your question.
All right.
You don't necessarily like something just because you own it. That's a strange statement about marriage, too, but we can get back to that. here's some bad news.
Okay.
A little bit of bad news. Moody's has downgraded Nissan's credit rating to junk status.
Oops.
So this is why we expect this week or next week for the CEO of Nissan to step down.
Mm.
it's bad. They don't have a partner. Honda embarrassed them.
Right.
It's kind of ugly.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. You and I made two mistakes in the last two episodes.
Okay.
You made the mistake second, so I will go first.
Okay.
When we were talking with the folks at Ford about police cars, I asked the question about police departments adopting front-wheel drive vehicles. I had forgotten that the current generation of the Explorer is actually rear drive.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means for the front suspension, and I didn't actually look. But traditionally, once upon a time, cops were very wary of front-wheel drive. And the previous generation Explorer was based on a front-drive architecture. So my mistake, I just wanted to clarify.
Okay.
So there you go. You had said, ma'am, that the Altima was not available with Nissan's ProPilot.
Well, the one I had then didn't have it.
Well, that's true. That's
and it's
the one
a top-tier trim?
It's not. The SR is below the SL.
Okay. So only the SL has it?
No. For some reason, it's available. It's not available on the SR. I can't explain it.
Okay. That's
I wrote
weird.
My review last night, but ProPilot is available on the Altima.
Okay, because the SR trim of the Kicks and the Sentra, I think, even have ProPilot.
Well, the Kicks was just completely redesigned, so that was easy for them to integrate finally.
Yeah.
But the thing about ProPilot, for people who don't know, it's not an especially high feature system, but it's great in traffic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the ProPilot 2.1, I think is what they're calling it, where it's the hands-free system, but it is, you know, steer assist, speed modulation.
Yeah, it's great in stop-and-go traffic, and it only works up to a certain speed.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Does it?
Yeah.
Because it works up to at least 80.
Then that might be a new system. But
like, it works up to at least 80.
Because I've used the ProPilot in traffic, and it's pretty impressive in stop-and-go traffic.
Okay.
Kia, bringing out the EV4 later this year, a $35,000, 201 horsepower, 330 mile of range, little EV. Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Could be good.
Yeah.
We'll see. Styling is controversial. It's got a really weird looking back end, like C-pillar aft. It's got almost an old Saab look to it. I like it.
If I'm thinking of the right vehicle, I've seen the pictures. It looks like a smaller EV9.
EV9? Mm-hmm. Like the SUV?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, this is a sedan with a hatchback that won't be available in the U.S.
Okay, so I'm thinking of, you said...
It's about the size of a Civic.
No, what did you call it?
EV4.
I thought EV4 was an SUV.
Mm-mm.
Huh, okay, I'm off my game today. Don't mind me.
All right,
I'm just going to sit
that.
Here and be quiet.
We were going to talk about bad car names, but why don't we get to our review first?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we can cover those after the quiz if we have time. So it's hard to believe at this stage in the electric car game that any electric cars other than Teslas are ready for redos. You know, you wouldn't think, everything just seems so new.
Yeah.
But the Hyundai Ioniq 5 just had a significant mid-cycle freshening. And you have driven it.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's really interesting about the mid-cycle refresh, and so what? It came out in 22, I think.
I think I would have written that down, and I didn't.
and so it's only about 3 years old. But yeah, mid-cycle refresh. And it is, it doesn't look that different from the outside. I think some of the lines are a little bit crisper. The front fascia, the rear fascia, a little bit of a redesign. But if you were just looking at it and you just kind of glance out of the corner of your eye, you wouldn't say, oh, that's the 2025 Hyundai Ioniq. Some of the changes that they've made, like under the skin and inside the vehicle, are kind of a big deal. So they now have integrated wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which was one of the big complaints that I think all of us had about the first go at this vehicle, because you have...
Not all of us.
Well, most of us. You're the aberration there.
Mm-hmm.
It had all of this great technology, but it didn't have the ability to do wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. And so that is now in there. And then they also have like kind of redesigned your armrest area, or like the console area, with it's still movable. It still moves forward and aft, and I really like that. I like the adjustableness of that. But they moved the wireless charger up, and they, you know, next to the cup holders, so it's a more convenient location. And I will say, as somebody who's often critical of wireless chargers, it actually works.
I want to laugh about something real quick. Don't lose your spot. Mm-hmm. I'm driving the Toyota GR Corolla right now, which is a hoot. But clearly they struggled to find a place to put a wireless charger.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's just sort of stuffed really far forward on the center console underneath the dash. It's fine if you don't need your phone, you're not using your phone, you're not touching your phone. That's great. And I'm reminded, and this is you do roll your eyes, of the Renault 18i, which was popular in the mid-80s.
Okay.
Or it was never popular, but it was sold here in the 80s. And they weren't prepared really for the U.S. market where they needed to have power windows in a vehicle of that price. So the switchgear was all underneath the console, and it, like, guys with big fingers couldn't roll down the front windows because the switchgear was tucked so far forward. Anyway, that everyone is scrambling for space for a charger.
Yes.
And if you don't have a big vehicle, that's tougher.
Yeah. But, I mean, here they've moved the wireless charger into a location that makes a lot of sense, and it doesn't overheat your phone. So here's the fun fact that I learned during the mid-cycle refresh review. Did you know that the wheelbase for the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is longer than the Hyundai Palisade?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a getting a big battery thing. And you run into that on electric vehicles.
But what it does is, because you don't have an engine and you can completely redesign the vehicle, they've taken that space. And while it's still a pretty compact vehicle, you have a lot of interior volume.
Yeah,
so,
and no overhangs at all, which makes for a very interesting design.
Yeah.
And by overhangs, we mean the space from the wheel center to the end of the car, front or rear.
Yeah.
And that can be a very good look.
Yeah.
If you have a slightly stubby car with no overhangs. Mm-hmm. Like, if anyone saw this at the auto show or they've seen pictures, the Rivian R3, fantastic looking, no overhangs. It's a great looking car.
Yeah. So at any rate, I just thought I was like, what? That kind of blew my mind a little bit. So other than those changes to the specific vehicle, the other thing they did is they added a rear wiper.
Yay.
Yeah. And the world rejoices.
I wasn't really aware that was...
Apparently it was a thing. So...
The funny thing about that car is they still call it a crossover, right?
Yeah.
But it's really kind of a really, really big hatchback.
Yeah, it's kind of like a...
I don't care what they call it. It's good looking. It's functional.
Yeah, it does. It does good. But the biggest change, in addition to a new trim, is the fact that it has switched over to the North American charging standard.
Oh, I had a question about that, and I didn't have time to look it up, so I guess I'll have to ask you, Jill.
And I may or may not have the answer.
The NACS, North American Charging Standard, which is the one that Tesla uses, that it seems like that's what we're going to universally, is that the only charger port, or is there an old CCS port?
It's the only charger port.
Okay.
So, but what they're doing is they are including, with the purchase of the vehicle, an adapter.
Okay, interesting.
So you can belly right up to the Tesla charger and get started, but you have to use the Tesla app initially. So, they're still working out the technical part of it. So, it's still a little bit in progress.
Wait, you have to use the Tesla app to charge any place?
To charge at a Tesla charger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, otherwise you can use an adapter and just charge
at
anywhere.
At CCS, yeah. And so I really like the fact that they're just throwing that in. And I will point out that the Ioniq 5 2025 model is the first vehicle off the line that has the NACS port factory installed. Now, we know that Ford and General Motors and pretty much all of the other automakers have committed to making the switch.
This is going to be the standard.
This is the very first vehicle that has it.
Oh, interesting thing about that, too, and it sort of amuses me, is that I don't know exactly why, but the Tesla connector and the Tesla cable are easier to handle.
Yeah.
They're smaller and lighter.
No, the when you pull out the CCS fast charger, I mean, it's kind of like you're wrestling. Like, there have been a couple of times where I'm just like, and it's so big and unwieldy, and you're like trying to wrestle with it as you get it plugged in.
Level three chargers typically have cables that are like rigor mortis setting. They're hard to move, and they're harder to move in the cold.
Yeah.
And then you have to turn the whole thing to get it to fit into the into the port, and it's just all heavy and bulky. And frankly, I would think that a smaller adult such as yourself might struggle with the massiveness of that stuff.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's a little unwieldy. So the cool news here, and I think that this is part of the sort of the mainstreaming of the electric vehicle, the IONIQ 5 is now available in XRT trim.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So, again.
Not to be confused with Chicago's WXRT.
No, not to be confused with that at all.
Okay.
Although there could be some interesting cross promotions there. I'm just going to put that
could
out there.
Could be.
But no, so the XRT, Hyundai has started this big movement of doing some off-road things and like off-road e-design and stuff like that. And so this is just another version of that. And so you will have some camouflage, like pixelated camouflage cladding that goes around the front and the rear and the side of the vehicle to protect the paint against chips or whatever if you do go off-road. You have a better departure and approach angle. You have, I think, an extra inch of ground clearance. So not a huge, you're not going to go on the Rubicon Trail in this vehicle, but you can do some off-road.
Is there a drive mode?
There are some drive modes. So it's got, like, I think sand and mud and then snow and then I think not gravel, but like rocks.
You know what's kind of a bummer? Mm-hmm. Like, you can have these drive modes, but they don't give you that opportunity. Like, if you go to sanded mud, the road in front of you doesn't turn to sanded mud.
No.
So that kind of sucks.
It does, but
you have to go
find sand and mud. Yeah. And we did, in fact, find
Palatine.
Some sand.
There's no sanded mud around here.
No. Maybe mud, but no sand. But no, so they took us to a short off-road course that had some sand and some rocks. And it was just like being on a trail to go to, like, a trailhead or a campsite or something like that. So it was not anything really tough. But, you know, it did an okay job. We didn't get stuck. We didn't puncture a tire or anything.
Yeah, it's interesting. Did they talk a little bit about the drivetrain? It's still purely electric, right? There isn't locking differentials or limited slip anything. It's all pure electric.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. And it might be one of the things that I think is hurting Tesla in those environments. Is that I don't think that they do much torque vectoring. And by that, I mean moving torque from side to side,
right,
which can be necessary in those if you're not locking
right
a diff. But anyway, so reasonably capable off-road.
Yeah, I think I could. So, you know, I've competed in the Rebel Rally in the X-Cross class, and that was with the Hyundai Santa Cruz. I think this could do that.
So the battery got a little bit bigger this year.
It did.
77 to 84 kilowatts. Range improved a little bit from 303 to 318 max range.
Yeah.
And just for people who know, this is one of the better selling, better accepted, better reviewed EVs out there.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the best selling was the Tesla Model Y, followed by the Tesla Model 3. My notes are terrible. followed by the Ford Mustang Mach-E, then the IONIQ 5, and then Ford's electric F-150 Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this will probably help it.
Yeah. You know, I did video review and written review, and essentially I say the same thing in both. Like, the IONIQ 5 is a great vehicle, and the improvements they did just made it that much better. And, you know, there are always things that I'm going to find in a vehicle that I don't like or that are going to annoy me, but I always feel like I'm picking nits when I do that. But, you know, I try to point out some good things and some bad things on every vehicle that I drive. And the bad things are just like, they're so minuscule on this vehicle.
I have nothing but fun driving that vehicle. Also, that's one of the vehicles, I think, because it is a unique electric design, right? It's based on an electric platform, the EGMP or whatever it is. Completely flat floor inside the vehicle. So you can slide across the back seat. There is no tunnel that you have to hop over or to cut into the space. So not only is it roomier, it feels roomier.
Yeah. And
surprisingly good use of space.
And again, that center console that moves back and forth, so you can move it forward. And like I, being in my far forward short driving position, I could actually rest my elbow on the armrest.
That's
or
cool.
If you want to move it back, then you could put like groceries or a briefcase or whatever in front of you on the floor rather than setting it on the driver's seat. So like you free up space in the front for storage. And I really like that as well. So I don't know. I think this is a very clever vehicle, and they've done a great job with it.
Sport model coming back?
They did not say.
Okay, so that'll be a later introduction.
Maybe.
Makers love that. If they have a popular version of a model, it comes later.
Well, and so, I mean, you do have the Ioniq N.
Yeah.
And
is that out now?
It is out.
Oh, okay.
But what's really interesting is the Hyundai Ioniq 5 N 2025 model does not have NACS.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Because it came out just a little bit before the line was ready. So I'm assuming that that'll be coming for 2026 model year for that.
I read this today. The XRT comes out first.
Mm.
Prices range from $44,000 to $60,000 for this vehicle, not including options, but including destination. It goes on sale when?
I'm assuming pretty imminently.
And then this is a big piece of news. This vehicle is now built in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
At the Hyundai Motor Group Mega Plant, America. Or HMGMA, for some reason, which is no easier to say.
No.
But that's in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
Which means it will qualify as long as it's around
mm-hmm.
for the federal tax credit.
So buy it quick if you want it.
Yeah. Yeah, you may want to do that. And there has been a rush.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see those numbers later. Here's a problem with electric vehicle sales numbers in the U.S. Tesla does not report or share those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to wait for registration numbers to come
yeah.
in. And thank you, RL Polk and other companies like that that do that and share that information.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Brad Parker, the co-founder and CEO of DealNow.com.
Mm-hmm.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. She is Jill Simonello. Jill, how are you today?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just okay?
Just okay.
You are driving the Polestar 3.
I am.
It seems like we've been waiting forever for the Polestar line to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They came out with the Polestar 1,
mm-hmm.
which was that crazy plug-in hybrid thing.
Yeah.
Weird to start an electric car company with a car with a gas engine, but they did that.
Yeah.
Did you ever drive that? Did you ever see that?
I did not. I drove the Polestar 2 and thoroughly enjoyed it. So I just got the Polestar 3 today.
I saw that, and it's funny. I passed it, and I'm looking at the logo on the back, and it didn't immediately hit me what that vehicle was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Polestar logo, for some reason, entirely my bad, I interpreted as a Tesla, not Tesla, Rivian logo. And I'm like, what am I looking at here? And then I parked. I'm like, that can't be a Rivian.
Right.
Because there's only one Rivian, really two, but it's the pickup and the crossover, and they look the same. And then it hit me. That's the Polestar 3. So that's finally out.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm planning a week-long series. Like, I'm going to do a check-in on the vehicle every day. And TBD, because I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is that this video is going to be about. Just know it's going to be a daily check-in about something. So I started shooting the video, and my neighbor comes out and was literally like, while I'm shooting the video, like, stalking me. And finally, I was just like, hi. And he was like, this is handsome. What is this?
It is good looking. It is one of those gray tones
uh-huh.
that we're seeing maybe too much of.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very Scandinavian,
mm-hmm.
right? Very Swedish. But I'm liking the look. So that's the Polestar 3. The Polestar 4 comes out relatively mm-hmm. soon, too. And I think that's kind of a low fastback sedan. I think that's going to be pricey.
Okay.
What do you know what this costs?
I have not looked at any of the documentation yet. Like, literally just got it before coming here.
Yeah, Polestar is interesting. They've had a rough launch. I think they've reorganized a little bit. Part of the problem with Polestar 2, and this is way, way, way inside baseball, Polestar was originally conceived as a division of Volvo, and Volvo is owned by Geely.
Mm-hmm.
And Polestar's launch was very expensive, and mm-hmm. it was bagging down on Volvo's finances. And mm-hmm. Volvo's like, yeah, we can't do this.
Right.
So it's been reorganized. Things were slowed down, but I think they're back in business. They're good cars. They're not going to fail. Geely knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And Volvo makes great stuff, and this is mostly Volvo tech.
Yeah.
So we should be good. All right. On the phone.
Yes.
On the phone, we have Brad Parker, co-founder and CEO of DealNow.com. Brad, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Great to be here.
Thank you for making time for us today. Brad, do me a favor. Tell us about DealNow.com and what you do there.
Yeah, so DealNow.com is basically a marketplace to transact cars electronically and to do the deal from start to finish. Our primary focus is actually on vehicle acquisitions. So a dealer could use it to shoot a link to somebody and verify the individual, verify the car, avoid fraud, and basically acquire a car off the street and have everything to verify title, verify lien, do lien and title release, and do it all in one platform.
Now, that would make DealNow sort of competition for like CarMax if you're a consumer, correct?
Not necessarily. It would be more of a tool behind the scenes that a dealer would use. So in a way, it'll enable the independent and franchise dealer community to basically provide a level of service, even more technology, but the ability to seamlessly acquire cars, but also make it very seamless for the end user and the customers, the sellers.
Okay, that's the point here. It is the consumer, they would be unloading their cars for
Correct.
Dealers.
Yeah.
And what this really turns out to be, and I don't know if a lot of people know about the franchise system here in the U.S., but the auction network, but this is an alternative for dealers to picking up vehicles at auction.
Correct, yeah. No, it's interesting how the trends have changed. It seems like over the years, I mean, trade-in is number one source of used inventory, always has been and continues to be. But for some dealers, the number two spot is slowly, going towards street purchases. They're finding that those cars are a little more retail ready. There's less reconditioning involved in those cars. And there's not all the fees and stuff that you experience at the auction, adding more cost to that vehicle to acquire. So it's definitely a growing trend, especially with dealers needing to source more used inventory. And so it's becoming more of a need to have a more safe and simple way to acquire those cars.
Okay, so I've got two questions for you. I want to back up a little bit. You said that the vehicles that are acquired through DealNow from consumers are actually in better shape than the vehicles that come through auction?
You know, according to the dealer community, there's, once again, they're starting to buy those cars more. So the people that, have owned them, they've taken care of them. They're kind of vouching for those cars. There's kind of the saying where, not all auction cars are bad, but all bad cars go to the auction. I think there's, I think according to many of the dealers, they do have good success with the street purchases and that they are more retail ready than a lot of the cars that they may buy from the auction.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about the consumer side of this, but I have a real quick question. I'm sure you know the answer to. New car dealers, let's just pick one, Buick dealer, something like that. They tend to sell more used cars than new cars. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, especially over the years with new car inventories, and everyone has had to, supplement and grow that used car channel. So I think, depending on what you sell, there's still shortages in new, on some vehicles. And profit margins are shrinking on new as well. So being able to maintain profitability and drive, more sales, the used market is where they're making that happen.
And then the cars that end up in the auction system, Manheim or some big system like that, those cars come from dealers getting rid of inventory that isn't appropriate for their market, and then largely from like rental turn-in and fleet leases, correct?
Correct. Fleet is the lion's share of those cars.
So
fleet returns, lease returns is the lion's share of those cars. And that's another thing, too, with like the whole hiccup since COVID and how there was a big drop in leases. It created a big, hiccup in the supply chain there,
yeah.
Which also made dealers go hunting for the street cars, as well, because the level of inventory was not in the auctions like it currently was.
I got you. So DealNow.com, that is consumer facing, right? If a consumer wants to sell a car, they should go to DealNow. And what do they do?
Yeah, so the DealNow will actually be more dealer facing.
Oh, okay.
We do have a sister site called privateauto.com, which is like a peer-to-peer marketplace, but we do have places for consumers where they can submit a cash offer on their car, and it goes right into the Deal Now platform where a dealer can bid on it. And another thing that'll be unique about our platform is when a consumer uses our technology, mm-hmm. unlike other platforms, they actually don't share their personal contact information. So you could actually get a bid from multiple dealers. Do not share your personal contact information. The only person that would get your personal contact information is whoever you decided to buy from or sell your car to. So anyway, that'll be, you know, one unique thing about our platform.
Now, Brad, when we started talking about having you on the show, one of the things that we talked about was a list of interesting tips for consumers that you had put together. And I apologize that it took a while to get you here because some of these were sort of aimed towards the December, January timeline. But one of the things that you said was that timing is everything. Understanding why the end of the year is a critical period for both buying and selling. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think in general, inventories, depending on if you're selling privately or through a dealer, definitely the amount that you're going to get on your trade-in, depending on what you're buying. But I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing for consumers, I think right now, is as technology has evolved, finding transparent marketplaces where you can actually sell privately, retain more value, but do it in a safe and simple way. I think the issue with our, selling your car privately and maximizing value and for a buyer, is that there's really no simple way to do that transaction, to just sell your car electronically and do the deal online. But I think as technology emerges, as there's more fraud prevention, as there's more trust and transparency in the platform that you use, and people feel safer to just sure. transact digitally online, there's a greater opportunity to maximize the value for your car and to save money as a buyer too. And I think that's the emerging trend is those marketplaces that provide transactional capability and that really eliminate the middleman and maximize value in that transaction.
Speaking of maximizing trade-in value, one of the points you had made was that you had tips for car owners looking to trade in their vehicles. My daughter's car is covered with little dents and filled with dog hair. What tips do you have for her?
I know. And our car has a little bit of some structural damage and a little bit of an engine problem. So, yeah, right. Looking for all the tips.
You know what? I mean, like the quick brush stroke is if there's an engine light, and if the tires are worn, those are quick ones where immediately there could be, $1,000 or $2 just stricken right off of the car. Mm. So sometimes just mitigating those before getting trade-in will put several thousand dollars potentially back in your pocket. And so I think those are quick ones. And if it is a quick and easy fix on the engine light, I would definitely do it beforehand. Curb appeal is also still a thing. Mm. And so, yes, pull out the vacuum, take out the dog hair real quick, and you'll definitely have a better chance of putting some more money back in your pocket.
You had mentioned tires, too. Typically, these days, tires are a relatively big investment. And that'll help you at trade-in time?
Absolutely. I think it seems like, even me personally, every time I go to trade in a car, it's like, oh, well, you're going to need new tires. So we're going to, have to take, $1,200 off, especially depending on, what car you're trading in. But that's probably even when a, dealer's buying a car from the auction or anyway, it's like, what are the tires like? Because that's a big expense. Mm. And also as a dealer, they want to make sure that car is, as retail ready as possible. And especially from a safety standpoint, they would not want to sell, a car with tires that have less than, 50%, life on the tread.
Okay.
And so naturally that's going to be a big expense right there.
And Brad, do you have any special tips for owners of electric vehicles they're trading in?
Yeah, on the EVs, I think, and especially I think the used market is heating up on the EVs.
Yeah.
So because of the volatility with new prices, and yes, that kind of, struck a lot of people, got had a negative experience with that. However, at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer that, you know, the trends are showing the rise in EV sales, the rise in EV market share. And there's a growing trend of people that may not be willing to buy new, but the used market for EVs, of people wanting to jump in after that initial depreciation, after that initial, you know, volatility of the new EV prices. But there's a growing population of people that they're definitely interested in trying out an EV. And so I definitely think there's a sweet spot in that, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 range, nice quality EV that's a few years old. I think there's very high demand for that, and so I think you will maintain maximum value for your trade, you know, with the EVs, because there's just the demand is growing for them.
Yeah, and you mentioned 20 to 30 grand, which does seem to be the sweet spot. I've been looking at EVs used online for a while now. And for people who don't know, 25 grand, up to 25 grand, you qualify for the $4,000 EV use tax credit. Mm. So that can knock a bunch off that price, too. There's a lot of rules attached
Correct.
To that. You have to buy
Correct.
It from a dealer.
Yeah.
It has to be the first time the vehicle's been resold. There's a bunch of rules, but could be worth it. And if you can get an EV at home for 20 grand.
Yeah.
That's a great way to experiment without committing too much.
Yeah.
Brad, we're running.
It is.
Oh, go ahead, Brad.
Because interest rates are still high and stuff, too. And so it puts you in a spot where it's still an affordable payment, too. And I think that's another reason why that's a desired, you know, strike price as well. But definitely a big opportunity there.
Brad, we're running out of time. What else should we know about DealNow.com?
Deal Now. We're making it easy for dealers to acquire cars and providing a seamless experience for consumers to sell their car to a dealer. And really, it's the first transactional administrative solution for a dealer to do that. Most of the tools out there are just lead generation, but this actually provides a full transactional administrative solution, you know, behind the scenes. And so we're excited to bring this technology, which will ultimately create a better consumer experience to work with dealers, where in the past it's been a little clunky for these types of sales.
Got it. Very cool. Brad, thank you so much for your time today.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That was Brad Parker with DealNow.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. I'm Tom. She's Jill. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. How are you, Jill? Second time I've asked you that. You got caught off guard with donuts.
No, I didn't get caught off guard. I just was a little bit slow. Yeah, I have a mouthful of donut. And you know what? We forgot to do something in the second segment.
Yeah, we did. We could just talk social media now.
And you go first.
All right. I'm Car Guy Tom on Twitter and X and Blue Sky.
Twitter X.
Yeah.
One platform.
Yeah. And then if you want to follow the fun stuff I do with like Nick DiGilio, I talked to him this morning. So that podcast drops tomorrow too. Listen to our podcast first and listen to Nick's. Listen to both.
listen to both.
To both several times. But the fun stuff I do with television stuff.
And put happy reviews and say that my voice is nice.
Always give us reviews. All right, Jill, you're in social media too, but not much, right? You don't.
No, I don't. I social media, what is that? I'm on all the social media. And you can find me. I'm very prolific on TikTok. I usually drop at least one video a day. And I'm on YouTube. I do long form videos a couple times a week and then video shorts. So if you're not on TikTok, but you're on YouTube, or if you're on YouTube, but not on TikTok, you'll find me both ways in terms of video. I also have Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Threads, Blue Sky. I have all the things. You can find me at Jill Simonello. And I feel like I need to start hashtagging all the things. But my unique hashtag is Car du Jour.
I have Car du Jour.
Yes.
I have a thing going on right now, and I don't know why, but in the last 6 months, a lot of people reaching out to me, DMing me on Facebook, mm-hmm. want to know about cars they want to buy. And that's fine. And if I can help, I will. Mm-hmm. But try to be short and succinct.
Yeah.
Just tell me exactly what it is you're looking for and what you're worried about and what you need in a car. Like,
yep.
Tidy that up. Because I get some that are like, I have to go back and forth a lot of times, and I'm kind of busy.
You're busy?
I am happy. I am happy to help our listeners.
Yes.
A lot of Steve and Johnny listeners reach out to me, and that's great. I'm happy to help, but as much information in the first email as possible.
Yeah, and you know, actually, speaking of that, I just got an email from, I don't know if it was a listener of our podcast or somebody who found me through TikTok, but somebody said that their wife is 5 feet tall, they're looking for a new car to buy, and the GMC Yukon no longer has adjustable pedals.
Oh.
What would I recommend? And so
I have a fast answer.
What?
New wife.
Yeah, no, that is not the good answer. So if you are a listener, please know I did see the email.
She really is short.
I am really short. I will get to that. I have some thoughts because Ford and Stellantis have kept their adjustable pedals. So if adjustable pedals are a thing, you can still get them.
What was the vehicle? The Yukon?
Yeah.
Oh.
GMC Yukon.
Oh, well, the Expedition is awesome.
Yeah. So I do have some thoughts, and I will reply to the email, I swear. And maybe this could be a topic for a future podcast where we talk about like the tall and short of it, like what's good for big guys and what's good for short girls.
Yeah, that might be two shows.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. Yeah. Yep. It's interesting because, since I've been test driving vehicles, mm-hmm. vehicles have actually got roomier, larger and roomier. It's actually less of a challenge now than it was. Like I'm driving this GR Corolla.
Which is a teeny tiny car.
But I fit fine.
Yeah, I love that car.
I fit fine. The only vehicles I really don't fit in are like the Miata.
Mm.
And some small German four doors. But anyway, it's quiz time.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Never ready.
This is the quiz you've been begging me to do.
No, I've never begged you to do any quiz.
Today's topic is engine parts. I'm just going to give you a part and you have to tell me if it's real or not.
I'm going to eat my donut.
All right. Are you ready? You understand the rules?
I understand the rules. Did you explain the rules to everybody else?
Not those rules.
Okay.
Five questions plus a bonus question. You need three for a win. Mm-hmm. The bonus question, obviously, always related to the topic of the day.
Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to give you a part name.
Mm.
You have to tell me if it's real or not real.
Mm-hmm.
Timing chain.
Real.
Real. Good job. You're on the board.
That one I know. It's going to go downhill from here. I took a big bite of the donut because I figured I'd have to stall.
All right. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Timing belt.
Mm. I think that's also real.
It's the same thing, really.
Okay.
Yeah. So the timing chain connects the crankshaft to the camshafts.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So there's a chain, there's a belt. And depending on the car and what they're trying to accomplish, you might get one or the other. The belt will wear more quickly, can stretch, so you normally have to replace the belt during the lifetime of the car. Chain can last forever, but it's louder.
Okay.
It also weighs more. Mm. But there you go.
So I have 2 points.
You have 2 points off the bat.
I don't know how that happened.
All right, the cam advance adjustment modulator. Cam advance adjustment modulator. Real or not real?
Gut reaction is to say not real.
Not real?
I mean, I'm assuming that would be referencing like the camshaft, but
yes, yes, I'm sure that's a logical assumption.
If you were making this up, that's what you're referencing. If it's real, that's what it's referencing, but I think it's fake.
The cam advancement adjustment modulator is fake.
Okay.
You've already won. All right, ready?
And here I thought I was going to, like, goose egg this because I do not know engines.
The crank filter fluid pump.
That also sounds fake. So gut reaction
is fake. It does sound
fake.
It does sound fake, yeah.
Say it again.
The crank filter fluid pump.
Crank filter fluid
pump.
Pump.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it's fake.
It is fake.
Okay.
All right, you're going 5 for 5.
Wow.
Finally, the coil check flow valve.
Coil flow check valve.
Coil check.
Coil check.
Flow valve.
Mm.
You can look at it. I didn't write the answers on there.
Coil check flow valve. I'm gonna say that's also fake.
It is. You went 5 for 5.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just my bad writing.
It could be.
All right. What do we got here? Got a few minutes left. It's bonus question time. according to my favorite website, franchise.net.
Okay.
We haven't visited that site in a while.
No,
because
anything with .net is totally...
Yeah, totally legit.
Yeah.
I need you to tell me which of the following is not a real franchise opportunity.
Okay.
You go through this site, and you're like, why would anyone ever write a check for $150,000 to these people? Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I've got four opportunities here. These are franchises. You and I could pool our money and just open one of these franchises right now.
Okay, so I've got like $5,000. You've got $145,000?
Something like that.
Okay.
Oh, God. I need to retire. All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Rock and Roll Sushi. Waxing the City, Badass Coffee of Hawaii, or Kaiser Wok, W-O-K.
Wasn't there something with a movie with like Kaiser Permanente or something like that?
Kaiser Sosa.
Yeah, Kaiser Sosa, that's
The Usual Suspects.
Yes.
It's funny you would mention The Usual Suspects because I just watched Casablanca.
Okay.
And in that movie, the line, round up the usual suspects, I think it's uttered three or four times.
Okay.
Yeah, Kaiser Sosa. Rock and Roll Sushi, mm-hmm. Waxing the City, Badass Coffee of Hawaii, and Kaiser Wok.
So...
Wok, W-O-K.
I definitely think the first one and the third one are real. Those sound totally legit.
Badass Coffee?
Yes, I want Badass Coffee.
And Rock and Roll Sushi?
Yeah.
You think it's real?
100% real.
I think that's a terrible name, whether or not I made it up.
Why?
Rock and Roll Sushi?
Yeah.
Weird.
It's rocking and they've rolled it. Come on.
Fine.
Roll the sushi.
Fine. Then you're down to Waxing the City.
I don't even know what that would be for.
I have a description.
Okay.
As the personal care movement continues to develop and more people recognize the benefit of a regular self-care routine, the demand for Waxing the City also grows. Now is the time to bring Waxing Studio to your market. And the Kaiser Wok only says Eurasian fast fusion cuisine. Waxing the City, Kaiser Wok.
I think Waxing the City has to be real.
All right, that leaves.
Because I, yeah, wax on, wax off.
Yeah, Kaiser Wok is the fake.
Yeah.
And I have great ideas for the logo.
Okay, so by the way, if you're going to make that the fake, like, you got to do a better description.
Well, I didn't really think I was going to read the description. You went 6 for 6.
I did.
Nice job.
You got to do a better description next time.
All right. I sent you an email. You don't respond to emails anymore, so I don't know if you saw it.
I did see it, but I had a week last week.
Yeah, but did you come up with any bad car names?
But here's the thing. I mean, in terms of names, like, nothing is really springing to my mind other than the whole, you know, BMW, like, 300 X-Drive I-45D or whatever. Like, those, I don't understand why people do the alphanumeric. Those are bad names.
You know why they used to do that?
Well, they used to make sense.
Here's the thing about that. If you go back far enough to the 50s and the early 60s, when Chevrolet, Ford, Plymouth, Dodge, DeSoto, all they sold were Chevrolets, Fords, Plymouths, or DeSotos. Mm-hmm. There weren't model names.
Right.
There were trim levels.
Mm-hmm.
So Chevy sold like the Bel Air and the 210 and the one, was it the 160? I think those were trim levels. Mm-hmm. But a car was a Chevy. Mm-hmm. And you didn't worry much about a model name or a trim level or anything like that.
Okay.
And people could identify those vehicles pretty easily because style was radical in those days. And that's really, I think, what BMW and Mercedes especially do is mm-hmm. a holdover from that era.
Okay.
And Mercedes still, there's like the S-Class, the E-Class, and the C-Class. So we still know their cars by that. But when you get down to the specific trim level names, it's an effing nightmare.
It is. But, like, you used to have, like, the Infiniti G37, which had a 3.7-liter engine.
Yes.
That made sense to me.
Yes, those numbers did make sense. But then hybrid kicked in and turbos kicked in and nothing made sense. And Lexus struggled with turbo.
Yeah.
It was either, sometimes they would put a T on the number, sometimes they would just exaggerate the size of the engine.
See, and T, like, if they were going to say, like, 500T, that would make sense to me.
So I got some bad names from listeners.
Okay.
Don checked in with Aztec. He wasn't specific, but the problem with Aztec is that it's misspelled.
Yeah.
And there's a funny story about that. I can't remember if it was a Super Bowl or some big playoff game,
mm-hmm.
but General Motors, Pontiac advertised the Aztec. And this is kind of the early days of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
No one could find the right spelling and couldn't find it online. And it was a funny thing because at this point, they had not yet considered the importance of search engine and search.
Right.
All right. Guy came in with K4 and K5.
Yeah, and that's the alphanumeric thing again.
Yeah, and they'll sound like Himalayan mountains, which they are. I believe the Himalayan mountains are all K.
Okay.
Something. All right. Susan came in with Ford Probe. Mm. Probe always comes up.
Yeah, Probe is not.
And then Fred, who I think is a fellow journalist, mentioned the BZ4X, which is...
Oh, yeah, the BZ4X. I made lots of jokes about that when that came out.
Here's the thing about BZ4X. It does actually mean something.
It kind of does.
But Toyota has not supported that.
No.
So BZ is beyond zero, so beyond zero emissions, I presume. Mm-hmm. Four is the size class of that vehicle, and X is crossover.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares? I mean, that's rough.
Yeah. Well, I think when I first drove the vehicle, and I made the joke that it sounds like one of Elon Musk's children's names.
of which apparently he has many.
Yes, he does, apparently.
His 14th?
I don't know.
Yeah, all right. So I had some from an old article I wrote.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Terraza. You remember it?
Yeah, Buick, wasn't it?
Yeah, Buick minivan, 2005 to 2007, Terraza.
Why did you not like the Terraza?
Didn't mean anything.
So?
I don't know.
Why does it have to mean something?
I suppose it doesn't, but it should.
Why?
I don't know. Yeah. No one's going to remember it, and then no one's going to spell Terraza. Two R's, one Z.
That's true. That is certainly, it's like tariff. Tariff I always misspell.
Here's one that always bothered me because it was too cheap. Malibu Max.
Oh, you know what? My mom had a Malibu Max. She loved that vehicle.
People loved it. It was a Malibu.
Loved it.
That was sort of a wagon.
Yeah.
And it had a stretched wheelbase and really good rear seat space.
Yeah, it had like a hatchback and a shelf. My mom loved the shelf in the back. The adjustable pedals. It had adjustable pedals.
Oh.
For, again, talking about cars for short people, my mom is like my size. She loved that vehicle.
This was a version of the ugliest Malibu ever.
It was hideous.
Yeah, and Max was spelled M-A-X-X.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted us to spell it all caps. I was like, get out of here.
No, journalists don't do that.
Yeah, 2004 to 2007, ugly car. People who owned them loved them.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
And then, of course, the Nubira.
The what?
The Nubira. The Daewoo Nubira, 1999 to 2002.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, that's no one did.
Okay.
The funny thing, we should talk about Daewoo one day. This would be a great Sam Fiorani conversation.
Okay.
Daewoo came to the United States, and they had planned to sell vehicles through brand ambassadors.
Okay.
Mostly college students.
Huh.
So they were hiring college students, and I think they were going to give them cars to drive, so college students would be happy about that, to basically sell the vehicles for them.
Mm-hmm.
It was the dumbest idea ever. And I think it was Car and Driver, but it might have been Automobile. But one of the buff books followed one of the college students around, and the college student was totally unimpressed by the whole process. And apparently Daewoo wanted people to believe that Porsche helped them develop the chassis for these cars. Here's the thing about that. Porsche and Lotus, and there's a couple other sports car makers, have engineering departments that do sell their services.
Mm-hmm.
Having Porsche design your chassis doesn't mean it's a Porsche chassis.
That's true.
It just means it might be good.
Yeah, well, you hope.
All right. Fisker Karma. Yeah.
That doesn't bother me.
It bothers me a little.
Why?
I don't know. Karma was, first of all.
Karma, chameleon.
Fisker had bad karma.
They had very bad karma.
2011 through 2012. The Fisker Karma came out at exactly the same time as the Tesla Model S and the Chevrolet Volt.
Okay.
Two of those vehicles did better than the Karma. The Karma had a bunch of technical issues.
Yeah.
You know what it had? Software issues.
Mm.
You know what the last round of Fiskers had?
Software issues.
Yeah. Mm. That company, right, someone bought Fisker, started selling that vehicle. The company name became Karma.
And it was Rivero.
Rivero.
Yep.
Yeah, you remembered. And I just checked. I don't think that company sells anything this year that's street legal.
Okay.
They have a bunch of pictures of things that are coming soon. I bet they're not coming soon.
Yeah, it's like the pizza joint on the corner by my place that's been coming soon for 5 years. It's not coming.
Yeah.
It's not coming.
And finally, Plymouth Breeze. It was a very girly name, 1996 to 2000. But one of the problems with the Breeze, too, is that Plymouth used to sell a lot of vehicles into fleet. And during those years, if you went up to like Great Lakes Naval Base, you would see officers driving around in Plymouth Breezes that were like purple or pink that had the opposite color badges. I'm like, oh, did no one at the Pentagon see this coming?
Yeah, purple or pink.
Not good.
No. I don't even want a purple or a pink car.
No. You know what's funny?
And I like pink.
You know what's funny? I put up an article today on the Consumer Guide Facebook page about pink cars.
Okay.
But they're all from the 50s, really. When pink and coral were huge.
Well, you know the only pink car right now that I think really works? The Jeep.
What is that color?
It's, what is it? Pink Tuscadero.
Oh, yeah.
Tuscadero pink.
And we talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah, we did. I think that is the one pink car that really works. It's kind of like this metallic, bright, vibrant pink.
What is the Fiat 500e that's pink? Or is it not pink?
It is.
Is it gold?
I think they call it rose gold.
Rose gold.
Yeah.
That kind of works.
But the Jeep comes off being a little bit more masculine, whereas I think a pink Fiat is very feminine.
Oh, yeah. Also, not selling well.
Mm.
We knew this was going to happen. The Fiat 500e is not selling well.
But it's not supposed to be a volume seller.
It should sell in some volume.
You know what? This was, I did a video review on the Fiat 500e, and I came to the conclusion that it is a car that I could own, and it would be a great complement to whatever other, like, because my husband needs a gas vehicle for all the driving he does. It would be a great complement to whatever other vehicle we have, just because it is so much fun to drive, and it is so great in a city.
What is the range? 130 miles? 140 miles?
I think it's more than that.
It's better than what the Mazda MX-30 was.
Oh, which was only 90 miles.
Yeah, and there was also the Mini. I'm trying to remember. That was also about 110 miles or something like that. So it's better than that mileage.
Yeah.
But the other audience for that vehicle is wealthy families with kids, where they have two cars for mom and dad, and they need a third or fourth car. You know, and they have two or three driving age kids.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect car. And they're responsible for plugging it in. It doesn't require maintenance. And if it's not plugged in, they're not going to the movies. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
And they can't go on a road trip unexpectedly in that vehicle either.
Well, they could.
It's like, but it would require a little
bit
more.
It's perilous. Thought.
Yeah, it's perilous. you know, I have a friend who had one of the old Nissan Leafs.
Uh-huh.
And when she got a new car, that Leaf became the hand-me-down vehicle for her teenage driver because it had, and we're talking about when it had like 90 miles of range. And like it had even less range by the time she handed it down. But her whole thought was they're not going to go very far.
Here's the thing about that. And we didn't talk about it earlier when we were talking about charging. The Leaf and the Mitsubishi iMiEV, if you have one of those, you might want to get rid of it relatively soon.
Chatamo.
That's exactly the problem. Level 3 charges right now have Chatamo.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a problem with that, too. If the Chatamo is working, but the CCS is not, and CCS is what 99.5% of Americans use, it will tell you that that site is working.
Right.
I've run into that.
And the same. And you go up and you're like, no.
Not working.
Chatamo is working. CCS is not working. Arr.
And for whatever reason, Chatamo was the standard that was adopted by Nissan. And it seemed like it was going to happen because Nissan was a pioneer.
Well, it was like a Japanese standard.
It was a Japanese standard. And Nissan at the time with the Leaf was pioneering this stuff. So it seemed like that was going to happen. And then no one else adopted it.
Yeah.
And the Leaf doesn't use it anymore either.
Mm-mm.
All right. Guess what we did?
We had a really good show.
Good show, yes. Thank you to Brad Parker, co-founder and CEO of DealNow.com. Thank you, Jill. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. I joined Steve and Johnny this coming Saturday at midnight, Chicago time, on WGN Radio in Chicago. Listen in. And let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.